Hello again and welcome to Musings on Golf, where we try to hit it long and straight every time. My name is Kelly Elbin. I'm your co-host along with my co-host, Bob Bupka. Bob, how are you?
I'm fantastic and very excited about this week's show, Musings on Golf. And we have a combination. We have a great tournament that we're going to recap, and we have an awesome guest that's going to be joining us in the form of Steve Sands. Everybody knows him from Golf Channel and NBC Sports, and he is absolutely fantastic.
He is, and to give our listeners a little bit of a sneak preview, we just got off the phone with Steve, and the interview was fantastic. He's just a great guy. And he's been doing this a long time, Bob. You've known Steve. He was one of the first, or you were one of the first that guys that Steve got to know when he came out on tour.
Yeah, it's over 20 years ago, and his first event, ironically enough, was the Heritage, which was just this past week. He'll talk more about that. Everything that Steve has to say is just so rich in content. I'm positive that our listeners are going to enjoy that. They're also going to enjoy the fact that what a winner at Harbortown. I mean, his background story about it, and Kelly and I will get into that in a little while. But first, I think we ought to hear from Matt Fitzpatrick on his thoughts at winning at Heritage.
Yeah, this one is the one that I've always wanted to win. Other than the majors, of course, you know, this place is just a special place for me, and you know, means the world to have won it. I came into this week feeling that my game was, you know, making positive strides, and but my goal was to enjoy this week. I just wanted to enjoy it. My family's here, my girlfriend's here, and I really did want to just make sure that that was the big thing.
Bob, it's a most fascinating story with a kid and his family from England who decided to vacation at Hilton Head. All the memories they've had, and now adding the actual winning of the tournament he saw as a little kid. Bob, what a story.
Yeah, I mean, if you submitted it to Hollywood, they say, get out of here. But he started going when he was 6 years old. You know, when you consider coming from England and you're coming to the United States, I mean, you got hundreds of thousands of potential vacation spots, and yet they settled in on Harbortown. And they fell in love with the place, and I guess they may love it a little bit more now after that inspirational victory. Matt Fitzpatrick over the defending champion, Steve Sands. What a story.
Well, and it was the dream come true again for Jay Monahan and the guys at the top of the pyramid on the PGA Tour when they put together these designated events to have just the type of scenario where you have the reigning U.S. Open champion and Jordan Spieth, who the crowd clearly was in favor of. The putt that Jordan hit in the first playoff hole on 18, it looked like it was in the hole, somehow lipped out, had another chance on the second playoff hole on 17, and you cannot give Matt Fitzpatrick, the international player that he is, another opportunity, and he hit a great shot into 18. But yeah, I think it's exactly what the tour has wanted. You want to have these elite players playing big events, and people will watch, and to have the drama down the stretch, it's exactly what they wanted.
And what a beautiful setting, Harbortown. If you've never been there, I highly recommend you put that on your bucket list. How about the U.S. Open? Record number of entries for the U.S. Open. 10,187 people are going to try to get into the U.S. Open that's going to be held at the Los Angeles Country Club. That is an amazing number, Kelly.
It is. About 60 more than the entries for the 2014 U.S. Open that was played at the number two course at Pinehurst. Martin Kaymer ended up winning it. But there's obviously a lot to the North Course at LA Country Club. It's never hosted the U.S. Open, but boy, the reviews of it are just fabulous. But I also think, Bob, the U.S. Open, it's our national championship, and I'd like to think. I think it's been, you know, a number of years now where the entries have been at least 9,000 every year. Now, this one is much higher, obviously, but people who are good players who feel like, boy, I'd love to be able to give it a shot more and more. You have more and more good players, Bob. Yeah, really more and more outstanding players at the very high level than ever before playing this game.
Yeah, and that makes it just that much harder to get into the U.S. Open. But if you do qualify, you'll love it the rest of your life. I think, Kelly, we'd be remiss if we don't highlight what Golf Channel has done as a player in this game.
There's no question about it. When Joe Gibbs, not the NFL coach, but a media entrepreneur out of Birmingham, Alabama, tapped Mr. Palmer on the shoulder and came up with the idea of this 24-hour golf network that eventually launched January 17th of 95. Arnold did the ceremonial flip of the switch, and it really changed the game, the presentation of the game, the news of the game, the following of the game. We somewhat take it for granted now, Bob, but you didn't have a golf channel for a long, long time. Not only do you have it now, not only is it 24 hours, but the quality, the production, and the talent, the likes of Steve Sands, it is as professional as the best about any network you'll find.
And I get a kick out of the first media alert of the Golf Channel came when we were playing out in the desert, and there was a little notice on the bulletin board, 10 o'clock, Golf Channel Media Center. I went in there. There was maybe 10, 12 members of the media. Wasn't that many at the tournament, but, you know, there certainly were more than that. And we listened and listened and said, boy, that really sounds like an ambitious undertaking.
Yeah, right.
And I remember asking the question, well, now that you made the announcement and now that we agree it's good, what's going to be the stumbling block? They said, just one. I said, what's that? They said, we have to raise $100 million in order to launch. We walked out of that meeting. Everybody was chuckling. Oh, boy, that was a great idea. But right. Who the heck's going to raise $100 million? But, boy, they did. And they now are a powerhouse in golf broadcasting.
Really are, and obviously every PGA Tour event, and when you watch the live from the Masters or live from the PGA Championship, et cetera, they're so well done and really elevates the game, I think, in so many ways. So, yeah, I'm delighted to have Steve, who's been a great representation of Golf Channel since he started there.
And this is going to be a special week for you, Kelly. I'd like you to share with our listeners what lies ahead for you this week. Boy, oh boy, I am envious, but I'm also very proud of what you're going to be privy to later on this week.
Thanks, Bob. Yeah, it's a big week. My dad, Max Elbin, was a tremendous individual, a tremendous man as a person. As a golf professional, his story was remarkable. Raised in the Depression, went on to become the head professional at Burning Tree Club outside of Washington, was there for 50 years, was the president of the PGA of America in the late 60s. My dad passed away in 2008, and he is being inducted posthumously on Wednesday into the, and that's Wednesday, April 19th, into the Maryland Golf Hall of Fame at a ceremony at Chevy Chase Club outside of D.C. Going to be really, really special. I'm going to have an opportunity to say a few words on my dad's behalf. And then I'm actually playing at Burning Tree the next day with former Maryland basketball coach Gary Williams. That'll be a real hoot. And then the day after, I'm playing the Blue Course at Congressional Country Club, which is just down the street from Burning Tree. So not a bad 1-2 punch, but a lot of great memories about a great man who really gave a lot back to the game. One of the things when the PGA Tour split, the players, the touring division of the PGA of America, when they split during my dad's time there, and it was a very contentious period, probably the most contentious time in the PGA of America's history. My dad was very influential in keeping the Ryder Cup within the fold of the PGA of America. And looking back on that, that was, to say the least, a wise move.
Yeah, and I'm so proud of the fact that you're going to get to enjoy that. I have never met anybody that had anything but great things to say about Max Elbin. And congratulations, Kelly, and you make sure you enjoy yourself. And hey, who do we have coming on to join us in just a couple of minutes?
Right after we hear from our friends at Titleist, we'll be joined by our friend from Golf Channel and NBC Sports, Steve Sands, right after this.
When you make the best performing golf balls in the world, your biggest competition is yourself. And now the golf ball that sets the standard for every other has raised the bar again. New Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are longer and more consistent with unrivaled control. Outperform with new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Welcome back to Musings on Golf. Bob, it's been a memorable 2 weeks in our game with John Rahm capturing his first Masters. And then Matt Fitzpatrick out-dueling Jordan Spieth in a three-hole playoff at the RBC Heritage. Who better to talk about the last couple weeks and much, much more than our good friend from Golf Channel and NBC Sports, Steve Sands. How are you?
I'm doing great. Kelly, Bob, how are you guys?
Hey, I know we're doing a lot better than you. My calculations have you doing the last 9 weeks in a row. You're the Iron Man now, Steve. Steve Sands, the Iron Man.
Yeah.
Not at all, Bob. It's an honor to do it. It's a pleasure to be out there. I'm still glad that they'll roll the old guy out. It's a lot of fun. It's working for a living, I can tell you that.
Well, you cannot say enough about the RBC Heritage and the finish they got with Fitzpatrick and Jordan Spieth in a three-hole playoff. I mean, that's a broadcaster's dream.
It was a lot of fun. It's such a cool event. The week after the Masters, which is such a grind for those guys, for the players and the caddies and the officials and everybody who puts on the Masters at Augusta National. And, you know, I think it's kind of a breath of fresh air when they get over to Hilton Head and kind of get that low country vibe, Bob. And then, you know, it's one of those horses for courses kind of place. It's a place where you would think a Jordan Spieth would do well. Patrick Cantlay loves the place. He did well again. He lost in the playoff last year to Spieth. Spieth trying to defend for the first time in his career with 13 victories, trying to defend successfully. And Matt Fitzpatrick, who, by the way, is a U.S. Open champion and also used to vacation there as a kid. It's one of his favorite stops on the PGA Tour. It was a great, great week. Great leaderboard. Those designated events are really, really stepping up into the forefront of the sport.
You know, Steve, you touched upon it, but it seems almost inconceivable that the Fitzpatrick family from England chooses Harbortown as their favorite vacation place in America. And as you said, he was there at 6 years old. I can't even fathom. You know, if you wrote that script, somebody would tell you, get out of here with that hogwash. I mean, nobody's going to believe that this is his favorite vacation place coming from England. But it really was.
No question. He and his family used to go there. Matt would go to the tournament as a kid and see the greatest players and see Harbortown Golf Links and vacation there with his brother and also his parents. And I mean, you can't make it up, Bob. Like you said, it's an amazing script. And you know what? If you think about Matt's game, think about where he is in the sport right now, it makes perfect sense that he would accomplish his first ever regular PGA Tour event victory there. It's a place that's near and dear to his heart. He's familiar with it. And his game matches up perfectly with that golf course. And Matt Fitzpatrick is a star, man. That kid has a lot of horsepower. He's going to be around. As long as he stays motivated and healthy, he'll be around for a long, long time.
And he has the huge advantage of Billy Foster on his bag, Steve. I mean, you rate caddies out there. I'll guarantee you, beyond any question of a doubt, Billy Foster's in the top 10%.
Without question. When Matt got Billy, I remember thinking, you know, what can caddies do for players? And when you're a young player like Matt and you bring on a veteran like Billy Foster, who's been around and worked for some great, great players around the world, it could only help him. And he certainly has upped his game. And I think Billy has helped. I think that Matt has done most of it on his own. But I think managing the rounds inside the ropes, dealing with all the things that these guys have to deal with on a week-in, week-out basis, I think Billy Foster is the perfect partner out there with Matt Fitzpatrick. And so far, all that hard work they've put in together is coming to fruition. Last summer at Brookline and now here at Hilton Head. This kid's going to pile up some wins, I think.
You know, the only thing I'm really concerned about, Steve, Billy Forster noted for laying on the ground to read the putts, but I noticed this past week he was a little slower getting up. You know,
yeah, Bob, I mean, I can't speak for you, Bob, but I'm 54 years old. We were joking on the air that when Billy went down, I literally said this to Frank Navarro yesterday, when he went down to read a putt and he got back up, I felt that way every time I get out of bed in the morning. when he got back up so slowly with his knees, we kind of had some fun with Billy about it. But, you know, as long as if Fluff Cowan can still get around the golf course, Bob,
yeah, that's true.
I'm pretty sure Bill Foster can do it.
I guarantee you Forster has Fluff's picture on his bedroom wall as an inspiration.
Steve Sands of Golf Channel and NBC Sports joining us here on Musings on Golf. So, Steve, yeah, we saw all the top names, but we didn't see Rory McIlroy, who decided not to play at Hilton Head, forfeited $3 million from the bonus pool by missing his second designated event. Did that catch you off guard a little bit that he was a no-show at Hilton Head?
I was expecting him to play. I think all the guys expect the top players to play because that's what they signed up for. Kelly, that's you know, driven by players like Rory McIlroy, if not driven by him himself. And I was a little surprised that after missing the cut and having a few days at home, that he didn't kind of recharge and say, I need to go play at Hilton Head. I also understand why he wanted a week off. And I get that. But in my opinion, if the players are going to advocate for these new rules and these new norms on the PGA Tour, then I think they need to participate. I don't criticize Rory often, and I'm not criticizing him here. It's his personal decision. He can do whatever he wants. That's the beauty of being a PGA Tour golfer. And I think Rory is not only a Hall of Fame player, I think he's a Hall of Fame person. But yes, I was surprised that he didn't go last week. I think it was a little bit of a shot I don't know if it was a shot. I think a lot of the guys were wondering, geez, you know, if you're spearheading this, then you also need to be a leader in this regard. And save for injury, Kelly, I think that a lot of guys were wondering why Rory didn't play last week. Again, totally understand it on a personal level for me. But I was surprised that he wasn't there. And it's a shame because everybody loves seeing Rory play.
You mentioned injury, and you've known Tiger for a long, long time. And it was very difficult to see the images at the Masters. Wondering from your perspective, Steve, what do you make of his future in competitive golf? Do you expect, for example, to see him next month at what could be a colder climate in Rochester, New York for the PGA Championship?
Man, I'm not one to count Tiger out. I think that's a big mistake. But it's a struggle to get to the point, Kel, where you can start thinking about Tiger contending at these events, at the major championships. The 4 days at Genesis, clearly there was a toll taken on his body on Saturday and Sunday. That was the first time he had played since missing the cut at the Open Championship at St. Andrews in July. And then you fast forward to the Masters and, you know, it just didn't look right. And he doesn't look healthy. I know he's battling and I know he wants desperately to give himself an opportunity to win at least just one more or get in the fray and feel it and see what happens. I just can't imagine that he can go 4 days at a PGA Championship at Oak Hill, where the temperature might not be, hot and humid, which is way better for him than it would be if it's cool and damp. Who knows what the weather's going to be like? The golf course is a beast, Kelly. I don't see him doing it. But again, I'm not one to ever count him out, but I just can't imagine that he's going to be playing next month at Rochester.
Hey, I'm interested in your take on the LIV Golf Tour. You're a very busy guy with PGA Tour events week in and week out, but have you had a chance to see any of the LIV coverage, any thoughts you have on it? And are you at all surprised that LIV hasn't lured over more players in the last, few months?
I'm not surprised that they haven't lured more top players over. It's interesting, when the PGA Tour got pushed, And I think it's a good thing, but they suddenly found $1 billion of loose change under the couch. So these guys are playing for a lot more money. And the rules and the norms, like we said earlier, have changed, and they're going to change again next season. And I think that that's all to keep the best players in the world on the PGA Tour. And what do I think of LIV? I think that LIV, by the way, LIV showed itself very well with Patrick Reed, Phil Mickelson, and Brooks Koepka at the Masters. Sure. I think the LIV product is different. I am a fan of 72 holes and cuts. I'm not only old, but I'm old school. I think that a shotgun start in 54 holes is more of an exhibition than it is professional golf at the highest level. That's one of the reasons I don't like the no cut thing on the PGA Tour next season. I just think, as a fan, I think it's a mistake. I know why they're doing it, and I understand, but I think professional golf at the highest level, there's something to grinding to make the cut. We saw it at the Players' Championship when play spilled over to Saturday morning. Texts all morning from guys, get that fan blowing, get that wind up so we can get that cut line, you know, to drop one shot so I can get in there. Cuts mean something to these guys. And LIV Golf doesn't have that. They play against the same players. The way it's presented, I'm not a huge fan of, but again, you know, I skew on the older side than the younger side. I've had friends who've gone there, Kelly, and who've thought it was a cool experience to be there, but it really wasn't their cup of tea at the end of the day, but they thought it was neat to go there once. I think the novelty has also worn off. And I think the PGA Tour has kind of stabilized things. I also think, without official world golf ranking points, without the ability to play in major championships beyond this year when everything gets recalibrated, I just can't see how any of these great young players are going to go over there when you can make so much money on the PGA Tour and have your schedule be what it is and also be able to participate in the major championships. I just don't see how it's going to get any better for LIV when it comes to getting the best players in the world.
Well, we're delighted to have Steve Sands with us after a brilliant 2 weeks at the Masters and at RBC. Let's switch gears a little bit, Mr. Sands. We're 5 months out from the Ryder Cup, going to be played in Rome for the first time. You know, with the play by Rahm and Fitzpatrick, Luke Donald must be very pleased right now. And at least on paper, this far out, it's shaping up to be a very competitive Ryder Cup.
I think so too, Bob. I think a lot of people thought when LIV happened, to Kelly's point about LIV, I think a lot of people were like, wow, what's going to happen to the Ryder Cup if these guys can't participate, Bob? And I think what's taken place is that you're not dead weight. That's the negative way of putting it. But I think some of the older guys who are still playing in the Ryder Cup, there are going to be some fresh faces now. And I also think some of those older guys, they're going to lose the captaincies more than they're going to lose the current players on the Ryder Cup. I think the Ryder Cup's going to be fine. I think it's going to excel, and I think it's going to be, you know, a tremendous competition because I think the players are there on the European side. We know that the players are there on the American side, but on the European side, the players are there. You talked about Rahm and Fitzpatrick and Rory, and Tyrrell Hatton and Tommy Fleetwood. There are a lot of great, great players on the European side. The biggest loss, in my opinion, for Europe, as far as the Ryder Cup goes, is they've lost their next five captains, literally their next five captains. Luke Donald would have probably been one of those five or six. So Luke is there now. But if you go down the list of the players who went to LIV, Graham McDowell, Ian Poulter, Martin Keimer, Sergio Garcia, you know, these guys are not going to be able to be Lee Westwood. They're not going to be able to be Ryder Cup captains. So that part of the Ryder Cup, I think, has drastically changed. But I think the competition and the players who will take part in Rome, Bob, I think it's going to be a pretty good one. I think that the Americans will be favored, clearly. And who knows, 5 months away, how these guys will all be playing in 5 months. Because you've got to be, you know, warm to hot when you go to an event like that. You can't find your game at a Ryder Cup. You usually bring your game to a Ryder Cup. So, having said all that, right now, I think the competition would be really, really good. And I'm happy for Luke Donald. He's a nice guy. He was number one in the world. He's won multiple times. He's won a bunch around the world. He was going to be a captain, but with Henrik Stenson not being able to because he went to LIV, He took the place, and I think he's a worthy captain. It just wouldn't have been his turn this time around. So players, fine. Future captains, we'll have to wait and see how it all plays out.
You know, Steve, I think you'll agree with me on this one. In the history of the Ryder Cup, I can never remember two nicer guys being captain of the U.S. squad and captain of, the European team. I mean, Luke Donald and Zach Johnson, good golly. I mean, they don't come any better than those two guys.
It's going to be one of those things we call an easy week in TV, Bob. There's not going to be a lot of I can't do it right now from those guys. Zach is, Zach is a borderline Hall of Fame player. I think he might get in. One of only six guys to win a Masters and an Open at St. Andrews. 12 wins total, 12-2. Ryder Cup captain, Ryder Cup president, Cup stalwart. I think he's got a chance to get into the World Golf Hall of Fame. And Luke Donald, like I said, former number one player in the world, like Zach, a wonderful person. He's going to be great to deal with. And I think both of them are going to go head-to-head and have a really good captaincy matchup. I can never decide whether captains in team competitions in golf are overrated or underrated. I kind of feel both a little bit, but I think these two know their place. They know it's about the players, and I think that's what makes great captains in Ryder Cups and President's Cups, when they make it about the players and the competition and not about themselves.
Yeah, the one thing about the Ryder Cup, though, as far as the captains go, they have the built-in response at the end. A losing captain invariably will allude to the fact that they just made more putts than we did. That's
exactly. Yeah.
I mean, it's hysterical, right, when they say that. You know,
the Americans haven't won in Europe in 30 years.
Yeah.
Think about that.
I was there for the last time they won, 93. Yeah.
Yeah.
When Davis made that putt at the Belfry, right?
That's exactly right.
Hey, listen, a couple of new faces we could probably expect on the U.S. Ryder Cup team. Sam Burns looks like he has an excellent chance, and I think it's a no-brainer with Cam Young.
Oh, man, I agree. I'd like to see Cam win, but Cam is, first of all, he's a terrific guy, comes from a terrific family, and he is a baller. I mean, he is a tremendous, tremendous talent. I would like to see him win. He's had six runner-up finishes. He's the reigning PGA Tour Player of the Year. But there is no doubt how great a player Cam Young is. I fully expect him to be on that team in Rome. And Sam Burns, he just won the match play. He was a little bit lost there the first couple of months in 2023, and he admitted that it wasn't physical, it was more mental. He was just having a hard time with his confidence and getting it together as far as that goes. But he put it together on Sunday at the Valspar, where he was a two-time defending champion. He played very well, finished in the top 10, and he carried it over the following week and won the match play, and won it in convincing fashion over the defending champion, Scottie Scheffler. So Sam Burns is a world-class player, just like Cam Young. Sam Burns has a few more wins than Cam right now, but I fully expect both of them to be a part of the American team. And I think they'll be on the American team for quite some time, both of them in their 20s, both of them fabulous talents, terrific human beings. There's the upside for both of them is monstrous.
We're coming down the stretch with our friend Steve Sands from Golf Channel and NBC Sports. Couple final questions from me, Steve, just about your time at Golf Channel. We were kidding on before we came on the air about your very first tournament that you covered. It was exactly where you were over the weekend at Hilton Head in 2001. Yeah. Tell us about it again, please.
Yeah, when I got hired in 2000, Kelly, I remember thinking, I've done all sports. I've been very lucky in my career. I'd done football, basketball, baseball, hockey, horse racing, tennis, NASCAR. I'd done a bunch of stuff. And got the job at the Golf Channel, and it was very cool. I loved the sport, and I went to Hilton Head that first time. And the very first thing I ever did on the air, ever, at the Golf Channel, my knees were wobbling like I was on a 10-meter high dive. And I was standing next to Tom Watson and Brian Hammonds, was in the studio, tossed it to me out there. He tossed it to us out at the Heritage. And I said to Tom Watson, you know, thanks for joining us. You're 9-time major champion. He looked at me very jokingly and said, it's 8. Get it right, kid. And I said, well, at least I gave you one more, not one less.
Exactly. So
that was the first time I was ever on the air. And then later that week, it was a rough weather week. Monday finished. Jose Caceres from Argentina running around the green with the Argentina flag. I don't know if you remember that. That was my first ever event. It was very cool. I remember thinking, wow, this is the big leagues. This is a huge thing taking place right before my eyes. And I was like, wow, this is so neat. And 22 years later, I was back there this week for the first time. I hadn't been there in a long, long time. And I'm walking around. The memories were coming back, not to be too nostalgic or melancholy, but the memories were coming back of, wow, I remember walking around here, you know, thinking, I have no idea who anybody is. I have no idea what I'm doing, where I'm going, what's going on, none of it. And now, you know, you fast forward all these years later, I've just been so lucky, Kelly. I'm so fortunate to work with great people, to work for great people, and still have the opportunity to come out here and do it. It's not only an honor, but it's just a joy, and I still love it. And may it continue. I hope it continues for a long, long time.
Well, I know all the followers, the listeners, the viewers on Golf Channel and NBC Sports feel the same way, Steve. A final question for me before I turn it back over to Bob. You know, when we were doing Musings on Sports, we had Ian Eagle on from CBS Sports, who's now replacing Jim Nance with the NCAA tournament call. And he really gave us some cool insight into how a typical week for him was in preparing for an NFL broadcast. For you, what's a typical work week like today? I think you said, or you were packing today to head to New Orleans tomorrow. Is that typical where you get into a tour event on a Tuesday?
Yeah, I was actually talking to Jim Nance last weekend, this past weekend at Hilton Head. We did Golf Channel. He does CBS. We chatted I've known Jim a long, long time. He's a great, great guy. We chatted a lot about his last Final Four, how emotional it was, what it was like, you know, being on the air when you're trying not to be emotional. I've only had a couple of instances like that. Most notably the Arnold Palmer funeral. I remember thinking, please don't cry on the air. I cry at everything, Kelly. I cry on the national anthem, sung well at a ball game. Mm-hmm. And I remember talking to Jim about that this past week. So it was pretty cool seeing that torch get passed. I'm very happy that Jim's going to have a few extra weeks at home with his young family. And I'm also really happy and excited for Ian Eagle, who is a fabulous broadcaster and will do a great, great job as the lead NCAA tournament guy for CBS Sports. As for my week, you know, normally I'll fly on a Tuesday, late Tuesday afternoon, maybe like the first thing out Wednesday morning, if there's a really early flight that gets me to the city where we're going, you know, before 9 or 10 a.m. And then I'll walk the golf course backwards. A couple of people in the business told me that years and years and years ago, because television shows the golf course from green to tee for the most part, as opposed to from tee to green. And I was always told, you want to do your homework, you want to, you know what's going on, but you also want to walk the golf course backwards. So I always go 18 green all the way to 1 tee, taking notes there, talk to the players, talk to the caddies, talk to the officials, talk to the tournament organizers, get some anecdotes, you know, some nuances of the golf course, of the way it's set up from the rules guys, what their plans are for the par threes and the par fives, reachable, short, long, whatever they're going to do. What's the bad place to play from? What's the good places to be on the side of? The players will give you some, you know, some storylines, those kinds of things, some insight. And then you get ready on Wednesday night, do your homework, go on the air Thursday. I'm usually a 3-hour before air guy. So if we're on the air 2:00 in New Orleans, 3:00 Eastern, I usually get to the golf course by you know, 10:45, 11 a.m., go to the, you know, read a lot of notes, the quotes from the guys, kind of gather my own thoughts and stuff that I've, you know, gathered the last day and a half as far as the homework goes. and then get into the booth. We do rehearsal about an hour beforehand, just kind of go over some of the elements you see on TV. And I'm a big believer, you do your homework, you're prepared for anything. You're never going to use all the notes you have, nor should you, but you never can be ill-prepared and you can never be over-prepared. There's no such thing. You've got to bring it, and then you've got to trust yourself on the air. So when we come on the air, you know, my job as the host or the play-by-play guy, or if I'm in the tower, is to make sure that the analyst and the walkers and the experts are being set up. You think of it like we're the quarterback and they're the ones, you know, making sure we're the point guard is a better way to put it, and facilitating for the lead analyst, facilitating for Frank Nobilo and Kurt Byram and all the great analysts who we have on live from the Masters, like last 2 weeks ago at Augusta, but for live tournaments, you know, do your homework, trust yourself on the air, and just be prepared. Make sure you're in contact with the guys who are playing, the caddies, the officials, the tournament organizers, and you just go from there. And then on Sunday night, if we can get out Sunday night, it's a bonus. If there is no flight Sunday night, we usually go out somewhere and raise a glass or two, Kelly, and enjoy ourselves. And then on Monday morning, get on a flight, hopefully go back home or go to the next event, whatever it is. But it's a really rewarding job. It's a lot of fun. I can't imagine having a real job and having to work for a living. But a lot of times it's a Tuesday night to Sunday night or a Tuesday night to Monday morning. If we're lucky, it's a Wednesday morning to Sunday night, and you don't miss too much at home. But it's a lot of fun. And like I said earlier, hopefully it just keeps on trucking.
Well, I have a sense that you're going to keep on trucking for a long time. Mr. Bubka, would you like to close things out?
Yeah, I really would. And before I make a wager or two, you got anybody you fancy up at Rochester there, Mr. Sands?
I tell you what. You've been to Rochester. I've been to Rochester. That's a big boy ballpark. And there are so many different storylines coming in. Can Jordan Spieth win the career Grand Slam? Rory McIlroy's wife, Erica, and her family are from Rochester. So it's almost a pseudo-American home game for a guy like McIlroy, who's won the PGA a couple of times and would desperately love to end this streak, which is so bizarre, of 9 straight years. Without a major championship victory for Rory, which is amazing. But it's real, real hard, Bob. And I'm not a chalk guy. You and I have been talking about wagering on all kinds of sports for a long time, Bob. I'm not a chalk guy. But it is awfully difficult to get past John Rahm right now. I mean, John Rahm is so good and is in such control of his game that if he has a good couple of weeks here, with some rest and then a tournament before playing at Rochester and looks decent, which he will, it's going to be awfully difficult to choose someone outside of Rahm. The way he drives the ball, his iron play, his short game's a joke. And right now the putter is warm. It's not hot, but it's warm enough. If his microwave just gets into the microwave, I mean, if his putter just gets into the microwave, not the oven, to get hot, I think that he's going to be there at the end. But he would be my early choice right now at Oak Hill, which, by the way, is such a cool venue. And it's really, really neat that the PGA is taking it back there. I love, love, love going to Rochester. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's one of the great places that they play the PGA Championship. I'll go a little bit outside. I'm going to go with big hitting Cam Young to finally get the job done.
Ooh,
winning
like
for
that.
The first time. And that being a major. Steve Sands, I've been looking in the dictionary for words on how to say thank you. I can't come up with enough of them, but we appreciate your time. You've been a good friend for a long time. I'm so proud of the work you do. Thanks for joining us here on Musings on Golf.
Bob, Kelly, Janice, I appreciate you guys having me anytime. I listen to the show every week, and I love it. Keep up the great work, and looking forward to catching up sometime soon.
We all aspire to outperform the player we were yesterday. The new Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X can help reward your best swings like never before. Both models are longer and more consistent, with unrivaled control. Outperform with the new Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X. Titleist, the number one ball in golf.
Hey, Bob, one of the things that Steve talked about in his preparation gave me kind of an insight into him. He talks to caddies. He talks to sponsors. He talks to players. He's a gatherer of information so that when he goes on the air, whether he's doing a live coverage at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a Thursday or doing work from the studio for the Masters week, he is extremely well prepared, and it sure shows in what you hear from Steve Sands.
Now, that's a good point. And to put it in perspective for our listeners, I would venture to say that, let's round off the numbers. Steve will come up with 100 things that he could say during the week's broadcast. Mm-hmm. And he may only use 50. But as he says in the interview, you're better off being over-prepared than under-prepared. And certainly anybody that watches Steve's work, he'll never be accused of being underprepared. He digests everything that he garners and then dispenses it at exactly the right time.
Well, we thank Steve Sands for his time and his insights, and talk about preparation. Our guest for next week, Michael Bamberger of the Fire Pit Collective. Michael's new book, The Ball in the Air, A Golfing Adventure, is now out. And what a prolific and outstanding writer Michael is. Bob, we're going to have a great time talking with him.
I'm looking forward to it. And on behalf of Kelly Elbin, this is Bob Bupko saying thank you to everyone that is a participant of Musings on Golf.